Good morning, everyone, and welcome back. This is Lucy
and Sharon,
and this is the Cancer Survivor Show brought to you by
the Chemo Girls.
How's it going today, Sharon?
It's really going well, Lucy.
It's a bright and sunny morning. It's very different to have a sunny morning here in Southeast Georgia.
It is.
We've had a real rainy season lately. And
it's been feeling like the proverbial 40 days and 40 nights.
But our good earth must have needed the rain.
Yes.
God brought it to us, and we can't complain. But it is a beautiful morning, and we're up a little bit earlier than usual.
Yes.
We have an exciting show today, and we have a very busy nurse that's going to talk to us today about what to expect on the first day of chemotherapy. And because of her busy schedule, we had to get up a little bit earlier than usual, but it's a great time. We're going to have a wonderful time with Shannon Cowie this morning. Good morning, Shannon.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing quite well.
Good,
thank you.
Good. Well, I want to tell everybody out there listening today a little bit about you, and then you can share more information with us as we go along. But Shannon is the nurse manager of the Cancer Care Centers of Southeast Georgia Health System, located in Brunswick, Georgia. And she has been nursing for how many years now, Shannon?
I've been nursing for 15.
15 years. And been a nurse doing oncology nursing for about 10 years now. Is that right?
No, actually 15.
Oh, okay.
The whole time, yes.
Okay. So what got you interested in oncology? Was there something personal in your life, or as you studied, was that just an area that seemed to perk your interest?
Well, the strange thing about it, nursing school, they really don't go over the top of oncology. They do, but they don't go into great detail. So when I was hired on with the hospital, I was actually hired on what was called specialty float pool. And that's when you just float around to different areas of the hospital that need help at any given, on any given shift at any given time. And for about 6 weeks, I trained on the oncology unit. And I was about to go to my next assignment when they had an opening, and I asked if I could take it, and they let me transfer into that position, even though they didn't usually do that with newcomers.
Uh-huh.
But they felt that I had a connection with the patients, and the patients just kind of grabbed me into it. I just fell in love with my oncology patients, and I just love the specialty. It's always changing, and so many great things about it. So much to learn. To me, it's spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
I just love my patients. They're the most appreciative. It just grabbed me. I didn't pick it. It picked me.
Right, right. It's certainly a time in life where a person is raw, isn't it? And there's so much need there in terms of emotional support, and not just emotional, of course, physical support too, but it's just a scary situation for a lot of people. And special people come along to fill that need there.
Oh, yeah.
When they walk in that door.
Just an angel.
Well, we appreciate that.
Tell us a little bit, Shannon, about where you went to school and such from there.
I went to Coastal Georgia Community College, which is now the College of Coastal Georgia, through the nursing program. So it was all local here in Brunswick, and received my associate's degree, went 2 years. Did my clinicals at the Brunswick campus of Southeast Georgia Health System.
Mm-hmm.
Was hired on after graduation there. And the training was just wonderful. We have one of the best programs around and still do.
Right.
Then I received my Bachelor's of Science in Nursing from Chamberlain College of Nursing, and that is located main campus in Chicago, Illinois.
Okay.
But I did that all online, mm-hmm. So I got to stay here and do my schooling through the internet.
Very nice.
Good. Yeah, and you live there in Brunswick. You're a local girl with your husband, Ian, and you have two children.
Yeah.
Stephanie is 21,
right. And
Spencer's 18. And Lucy and I, when we were getting ready for the show this morning, just so that everyone knows, we've met you before obviously in person, and it's amazing to think that you have children that age. You,
you guys are too kind.
Shannon, after seeing you, I think you had Stephanie when you were 10 years old.
I think she sleeps in salt.
Why do you think that? They think we're sisters half the time.
Yeah, oh. I could totally see that.
So, Miss Shannon, we really do appreciate you coming to us, because I think that this is a real burning question for any newbie that will be walking in, as well as their support system, just wanting to know, you know, what to expect. So let's just head into these questions. The questions are a compilation of questions that I've heard in the past, some things I've wondered, as well as feedback from our Facebook page. We've had quite a few folks on Facebook offer us up some great questions, as well as some things that you've given us. I'm sure you hear the questions all the time.
Mm-hmm. Interesting enough, the people that have posted on Facebook are past patients, past chemo patients. Mm-hmm. And those questions that they post on Facebook were things that they wish they had asked in the very beginning.
Right.
So we're going to try to tackle some of those issues today, so that anybody out there that is facing chemo for the first time, you won't be going into that therapy session in the blind without knowing what you need to know that very first session.
And those of you who are supporting our little newbie, you will know how to prepare and be as empathetic and fill in the gaps for them as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So let's kick it off with the first question. Will I need a driver, Ms. Shannon?
It depends on the regimen of chemo, but I would always insist the first time that somebody come with the patient. We give free medications that will cause you to be sleepy. Some regimens may not have the same pre-meds, but we always like to have somebody with the patient. It gives a little extra support. You never know how they're going to react after chemo and after they leave the clinic. So in the event they become ill, they really need somebody with them just to either bring them back into the clinic or to take them home and get them settled and to stay with them for a little while. But I do encourage that, somebody to come and drive.
Yeah, I totally agree. And how long will I be in the clinic on the days that I receive chemotherapy?
Well, now that depends. The very first day is always the longest. We like to sit with our patients and go over the medications just to make sure that they do know why they're there and what they are receiving. The physicians and the physician office nurses do a wonderful job with patient education prior to the day of the scheduled treatment. But we like to have that consistency and the continuity of care, and we like to build on whatever they taught. They're consented in the office, so we just go over the consent form again and make sure that they are truly aware and they truly understand what is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The nurses do sit beside them and take a lot of time. The total treatment time is going to vary. It's going to depend on how many agents we're giving, how many pre-medications we're giving, because those can take quite some time.
Yeah, I remember the pre-meds could take a long time.
30 minutes to an hour at the very most, I would say. But if we like to wait a little bit of time, too, in between giving the pre-meds and the first agent. You know, and then we do go through our two nurse checks when we do our chemotherapy. We check it against the order, and then we go to the patient's chair side and we check it again against the patient's ID band that they have on when they come into our clinic. We have them give us their name and their date of birth so that we know that's them. So it does vary, but we always tell people plan on being here for a little while. So we tack some time on to however long the chemo is going to take itself, and we tack some more time onto that, at least an hour and a half over what the stated time of the chemo.
Okay. All right. That's good. And then can you describe a little bit more about the process or the order of events from the time that someone arrives typically for chemotherapy?
Well, in the outpatient clinics like the one that I work in, when a patient comes into the lobby, they'll go to the front desk and check in. The clerk at the front desk will go ahead and register the patient and have them sign any kind of treatment consents, just general treatment consents and insurance forms right there at the desk. And then they band them with their ID bands, stating their name, date of birth, medical record number, account number, you name it, it's on their physician's name. Then they alert the nurse in the back, or they alert our aide that the patient has arrived. They check them in the computer, and we have an aide that comes out and escorts the patient to a triage room where their weight is taken, their vital signs. She may ask them some questions about how, just in general, how you doing today? Are there any questions? She'll let them know who their nurse is. They have an assigned seat. The nurse who has them, she assigns the seat. And they're placed there in a comfortable recliner chair that has heat and massage. We, as the nurse, go and introduce ourselves and to make sure that they're comfortable, make sure if there are any questions they want to ask, they can do it then. We tell them what we're going to do in regards to starting an IV or accessing their port-a-cath, or if they have a PICC line for IV access. We make sure that we know what kind of access they have so that we're prepared. Mm-hmm. Usually we know that ahead of time, but we just want to be sure that nothing has changed in between the time that the appointment was scheduled and the time they come to us. Then we will sit down and go over the chemotherapy and go over the consents that they had signed. We do print out education leaflets on the types of agents they will receive. We go over any supportive management or care of them after they receive treatment, such as Procrit injections for anemia, mm-hmm. that by chemo, or Neulasta injections for boosting of white cells after chemo, or Neupogen.
Yeah, I was a regular with those.
Yeah, oh, yes, and you do know, and we have to inform them that, you know, how long they may be coming in for injections such as that, if in fact they need it.
Right.
Most times physicians will order Neulasta or Neupogen prophylactically just to keep somebody from depleting their white cells. We just want to make sure that they stay healthy as much as they can through treatment.
And you chemo nurses are so good about reading the patients to know exactly what they need and when to give it and what signs to look for. I just commend you so much, Shannon.
That's right.
Thank you. And if we feel you're not telling us something, we'll hound you until you do.
Well, and you know,
that's your job.
I received my treatment through, well, one of your doctors and his practice and such. And one nurse in particular there, I loved all of my nurses dearly, but one in particular was there on a really rough day for me. And where they are typically very gentle and kind and all of that, she became a bit like a low-key pit bull. I mean, she was not going to let go of that situation until it was resolved. And I so appreciate her to this day for that. But, you know, this is just my formal thank you to chemo nurses. Thank you guys so much. Okay, so you did mention the port-a-cath. Can you give a little brief description of how a port is accessed? I know I would always be looked at bug-eyed when I walked in because mine's in my upper right arm, which is a little unusual. It's a passport, but
right.
So can you tell them a little bit about that?
I sure can. As you mentioned, the passport, those, it's very rare to see those anymore, but they still exist, and we just have to be aware of what to do when we encounter one of those. It's a little bit smaller than a regular port-a-cath.
Right.
We have to just make sure that we have the right needle and that we are really sure of where we're putting that needle in the passport because it is a smaller center to it. But the portacath, usually located in either side of the chest wall, upper chest, just under the skin. And we do have kits. They're called portacath access kits, and they contain sterile gloves, masks, chlorhexidine, which is our agent we use to clean the area. Everything is very sterile. Our kits even contain a needle and Tegaderm, which is the clear patch to put over it so that we keep everything out. Any germs that we feel could get into it are kept out with that dressing. We make sure that we have the patient prepared. We actually open up the kit and don some sterile gloves so that we are not compromising any sterility of what the contents of that pack are as we open things up. We are totally masked when we go to access. We are going to be right over the portacath or the portacath site. And as we clean it with the chlorhexidine, we are very methodical in how we do this. And we start from the center where the portacath is located, and we go in a circular motion all the way out, widening each time we go around, because we want to make sure that whole area and the area beyond the port is clean. We're over it, so we want to wear that mask. We don't want to be breathing germs onto something we've just cleaned.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. And we always ask the patient to make sure their head is turned. We don't want them breathing over it as well. My technique is always I let everybody know when I'm going to stick. Some people ask me, don't tell me. But the problem is I need you to breathe deep and hold your breath for maybe a count of three, and that's when I stick, because we don't want any little air getting into the chest wall as we're sticking that needle in. So it's always important to...
That's good information.
Exactly. We always want to let the patient know, okay, deep breath, hold, and I always go one, two, three, and it's in.
Because the actual stick is nothing, and I will have to tell you, I am a needle... cuckoo kind of needle phobe. And I kept my port. I'm not going to say how long I kept my port, because I don't know that it's...
A long time.
A decade. I kept my port a decade.
Oh, wow.
Because I hate to be stuck. And even though I know that I have to be stuck with a port, it's a one-time shot. And my passport was wonderful. But I do remember the cart coming. I'd get seated, and even, you know, I have to go every 4 to 6 weeks to have that baby flushed. But whether it was I was coming in for chemo or getting the port flushed, really the process was very similar. I'd sit down, and this wonderful nurse would come with a little cart, and all these things were laid out on the cart, and they would have the little pack ready and start opening and getting the gloves out. But they had other things like syringes of saline.
Right.
To flush the port and other types of things sitting there. And so it can look a little bit, not scary, but overwhelming. But all of this is going to move through your port. And so just from the patient perspective, all that you see on the cart, that's all about your port. And really, the two things you're going to need to be concerned about are following the directions of the nurse, knowing that essentially cleaning the port is going to be like somebody finger painting all over you. They're going to clean and clean and clean, but it's all very gentle and cool. And then it's a single stick. So essentially that part's not very bad. And then they're going to pull blood from the port. They're going to run the meds through the port. You're done with that part of it. And because it's a single stick, typically, the pain aspect is really very minimal.
We usually tell our patients, too, that we have a lot of practice in doing this, and we've worked with ports for years. And we encourage them to, if they ever have to go into the hospital for any reason or in the ER, to make sure that it's a nurse who has been through competencies to actually access the port, because as easy as they may seem, especially to me because I've done it for 15 years, it really isn't that easy to others. And they really shouldn't do it unless they really know. And we always say that, you know, it's the standard that an RN is the only one that's allowed to access,
right.
That it shouldn't be
right.
anyone else doing it.
Right.
You know, the doctors will let us do it. They don't, you know, they know how to do it, but they won't, they don't touch them.
Right. And when I had a car accident and I was in an emergency room and a little nurse came in and she was going to pull blood, you know, again, needle phobe. I'm like, sweet pea, I have a port. You need to do that from the port. And then it was this dead silence and panic. And the nurses started talking together, leaving the room and coming back. And I think they called somebody from oncology. Someone completely different came in, sort of rolling their eyes. And it's like, okay, sweetie, I've got your port, you know.
Not, I don't have your back. I've got your port.
I've got your port. Don't worry, honey. You know, I don't know. ER nurses, that just wasn't their thing. So yeah. I think what we'll probably end up doing is dividing this into two podcasts. So I'm going to ask you just a couple of other questions, and then we can talk about the actual process of the chemotherapy being administered in the next podcast, as long as you're okay with that.
I'm fine.
Okay. So the next thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, what if the patient gets sick or emotional? Will the nurses be patient, or do they see this so often that they're kind of callous to it, you know, or are they hardened to it, or, you know, how does that work?
Well, you know, that is one thing that we are afraid of the most, is becoming immune to listening or just seeing this day in and day out. I've got to say, I'm impressed, and I'm a little biased about my nurses and oncology nurses in general. You know, we are always there. Each person is different. Each situation is different. At times, we don't know what somebody is going through at home. They just have, you know, these other lives, and they're scared. Their world is just falling apart, and they might be worried about family. They might be worried about their job. We know that we're a sounding board. Sometimes it's easier to tell us what's going on or what's bothering them than it is to tell maybe their family, because they don't want their family to worry anymore. So we understand that, and we take hold of it wholeheartedly. We want to be there for that patient. We want them to feel comfortable when they come here. This is a safe haven. They can open up. They can even yell at us if they want to. And I've even had patients, not many, that were even, you know, somewhat angry with us for no apparent reason. Mm-hmm. But the nurses are very patient. I think that all in all, we probably are more like counselors sometimes. Yeah. Because we will sit there, hold their hand, we'll give them hugs. If there are things that we can help with, we will. If we can't, we'll find somebody who can. You know, whether it be financial, spiritual, what have you. There's, you know, we always look at it, there's no problem that can't be solved. And this is hard, and a lot of us have never had to go through it or never experienced a loved one going through it. But we do understand this is not easy, and they do need somebody to talk to. And you know, if it's us, then that's great. And we could have the busiest day, but we know we have to take time with that patient.
Right. Right. And for me, when my reaction when I would come into the clinic was nerves. And then when I saw my nurse, it was like I slid into home base, and she was my respite, my safe place, and I'd feel weepy. I'd feel relief when I saw my nurse, yeah, whoever it was that day, because it wasn't always the same person, but it's always the same batch of girls that I was always seeing. You know, I knew them, and it was a sense of relief to me and peace. So, okay, I think that is all for the questions for today. And next time we will very much touch on the actual administration of the chemotherapy. So until that time, this is Sharon and Lucy, the Chemo Girls. And remember, we're not just surviving, but thriving with you. Bye now.